Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. On May 3rd, we are marking the World Press Freedom Day. Needless to say, it has been another tough year for journalism and for independent media. This week, we also mark the first anniversary of the killing of our own three colleagues in Kabul, who all died in the same attack planned by the militants. And this is one of many events which makes this a sad year. Talking of this period, the state of press freedom in Central Asia hasn't been bright either. For example, in the latest press freedom index released by the Reporters Without Borders, Tajikistan's ranking dropped by 15 points and Turkmenistan hit the bottom of the list of 180 countries as the worst of the worst. Meanwhile, there were also some good news. For instance, compared to the last year, Kyrgyzstan 15 and Uzbekistan gained 5 points on a positive direction as per the RSF's latest index. So let's look into the state of press freedom in Central Asia with those who know it, who experience it, and who constantly monitor and report about it. To do so, I'm joined by Johan Beer, director of the Reporters Without Borders Europe and Central Asia Unit, Gulnaza Saeed, Europe and Central Asia Program Coordinator at the Committee to Protect Journalists, Farouk Yusupi, director of the RFRL's Turkmenistan Unit, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Very nice. Very nice to have you. So earlier this month, the Office of the Representative for Media Freedom of OSCE held a conference titled Journalists Under Attack. I tried to get someone from that office in our discussion today, but they couldn't make it. But as we mark the World Press Freedom Day, this is an important headline. So let's start from here. So compared to the last year, are we in a good shape or in a bad shape in terms of press freedom, Gulnaza?
We are still in a bad shape, but it also depends on what regions you compare it with. Mm-hmm. So comparing to some of the deadliest countries, you mentioned Afghanistan, Central Asia remains a bit safer. But in terms of how journalists can exercise their rights to report freely on various issues and media freedom in general, there is a lot to be done. And as you mentioned, Turkmenistan remains one of the closest societies in the world. It is one of the worst in terms of media freedom. The journalism as a profession has practically been eliminated there. There are just a couple of people who try to report independently from inside the country and risk their own lives by doing so. The good news is, I think, Uzbekistan, because every time I meet journalists from Uzbekistan, they say there is much more freedom regarding the topics they can cover these days. But, of course, there is a lot that needs to be done.
Right, right. Earlier, I was talking about the first anniversary of our three colleagues who were killed in Kabul last year. Central Asian journalists are faced with a different set of challenges, not life-threatening, but serious enough that it places the region at the bottom of the Freedom Index. What are some of the elements which keeps it there?
Well, because it is governed by some of the most autocratic leaders in the world. And again, the good news is that we have seen some political changes in Uzbekistan ever since the autocratic leader Islam Karimov died in 2016. And now we are witnessing another country where there is a political transition Kazakhstan, after President Nazarbayev stepped down in March, and now we are in the run-up to the presidential election in June. And this is a very good opportunity for Kazakhstan to open up in terms of press freedom and also wider human rights. But unfortunately, we haven't seen that yet. What we see is that some protests, especially in big cities, but the harassment and obstruction of activities of journalists who try to report on those protests continue as in the past. So not much has changed in the last couple of months, but we definitely would like to see more changes and more commitment from the interim president and then the newly elected president after the elections in Kazakhstan towards more press freedom and greater respect for human rights.
And do you like to elaborate a little bit about Tajikistan? I mean, it's one of the countries which is increasingly getting tough to report from or to be an independent journalist working in Tajikistan. What's happening there?
Again, it is a very autocratic system with the president who created this very corrupt system with his cronies and family members in key positions in the government. And even how the authorities treat the media have all the features of autocratic regimes, because these days you cannot just mention the name of Emomali Rahmon, the president, without adding like 7 words prior to his name. All of them mean great leader of Tajikistan, practically. So, and it is a form of censorship, because when journalists don't use those words every time they mention the president of Tajikistan, they can have serious problems with the authorities. And media freedom is very, very limited. There are just a handful of journalists who can still report freely from inside the country. There are a lot of Tajik journalists who had to flee the country in recent years because it became impossible to practice their profession freely. And the bad thing is that very often when we get in touch with exiled journalists, they cannot continue practicing their profession anymore. And that's a blow to wider press freedom in Tajikistan and in other countries. And that's a very negative phenomenon.
Right. I think, Johan, you are back, right?
I'm here.
Okay. So, Johan, we were talking about the challenges of being an independent journalist in Central Asia. And certainly there has been some change in terms of their ranking in the latest report that you released. So what is new in these challenges? And what's the source of this new development there, which kind of reshuffled those numbers in your index?
Indeed, the cards are reshuffled in Central Asia in the latest edition of the Press Freedom Index. Well, most significantly, Uzbekistan is slightly opening up, and this changes the big picture. Uzbekistan now ranks 160th out of 180 countries in our Press Freedom Index. So this is still, of course, quite a low record, but still, Uzbekistan has risen 5 places in the latest edition. This makes Tajikistan the second last country in Central Asia in terms of press freedom. Another change in the latest edition is Kyrgyzstan moving up again. Now Kyrgyzstan ranks 83rd out of 180 countries. This is a strong rise, but this mostly cancels last year's fall in the index, which was explained by the difficult election time when President Atambayev in particular and also President Jeenbekov filed several astronomical lawsuits against critical journalists, which had very dire consequences, including journalists being banned from leaving the country, their bank accounts being freezed. So both former President Atambayev and President Jeenbekov now withdrew these astronomic lawsuits, and the atmosphere kind of calmed down in the country following this very tense election. So this explains the rise of Kyrgyzstan in the latest edition of the index. But still, of course, there are many progress to be done. We'll probably dig further into that. And the last very important, significant change in the index for Central Asia is Turkmenistan. Turkmenistan now holding the very last place in our Press Freedom Index. This is, of course, quite a sad performance for Turkmenistan, being ranked lower than North Korea, than Eritrea. And this is the result of years and years of increased repression, increased pressure on the remaining independent journalists. And you and your network know that very well. We'll probably get deeper into that as well.
Yeah, let's get Farouk's point in this. Now that Turkmenistan is at the bottom of the Freedom Index and you have a number of journalists on the ground, tell me how this transition from second worst to the worst of the worst, how you guys experienced this transition?
It was not surprising. Turkmenistan has for years been on par with North Korea or Eritrea or whoever in the bottom was. But I think this was unfortunately very much deserved honor for Turkmenistan to be on the 180th place, because last year marked very atrocious and heinous behavior by the Turkmen authorities when it comes to the press freedom and freedom of speech. As you all know, young men who dared to give an interview to Radio Free Europe was jailed for 20 years. I think this is something that even most repressive and authoritarian regimes would hold back a little bit, to jail a person just for giving an innocent interview to a media outlet. And besides that, not only journalists cannot freely express or freely report from the country, the authorities are doing everything possible to restrict ordinary Turkmens to get access to independent information, independent news. We have reported about to what extent the Turkmen authorities go and buy new technologies from Western companies in order to block the sites, in order to find out, single out people who are trying to get to the block sites, and they call them and question them and threaten them, and they're putting every effort possible in order to stop people from read and get a free and independent news.
Okay, Johan, just to follow up on what Faruk was saying, I mean, it's obviously challenging to be a journalist and report from Turkmenistan, and then and on the top of that, authorities are hiring experts or buying new technologies to suppress if there's any room left for an independent place to report about things that's happening in Turkmenistan. So what's the some of the mechanics from your end which contributed to Turkmenistan being placed where it is today?
Yeah, Faruk did well stressing that Turkmenistan's record was already abysmal, and the pressure on the remaining independent journalists who are forced to operate clandestinely has only increased over the past few years, with many of them being threatened out of the job, others being arrested, tortured, attacked. So this has been on the increase. On the other hand, indeed, pressure has increased on simple internet users. And just 1 or 2 months ago, Turkmenistan also started to block VPN services, which makes it now even more difficult for the scarce internet users to access independent news processed abroad. In addition, as you mentioned, the mechanics of the index, it has to be stressed that recent geopolitical events had some consequences, in the sense that the international press gained some very scarce and small, but still some access to the North Korean leader due to his meetings with President Trump abroad. So this also, not significantly, but still it made a bit easier for international media to get a bit information about what's happening in North Korea. And this resulted in an increase in the score of North Korea, which also contributes to make Turkmenistan's fall more significant. So this has also to be viewed in this context. But of course, the most significant thing is the ever increasing efforts of the Turkmen government to crack down on free speech, which makes the gap between reality, the reality experienced by Turkmen citizen with an unprecedented economic crisis, this gap with state propaganda is more and more severe.
Bruce, we are talking about the different set of challenges for independent media in Central Asia compared to some of the security risk countries in the region. But I wonder which one is a bigger threat to the press freedom. I mean, is it security or the type of challenges that the journalists are facing in Central Asia?
Wow, that's a tough one. Kind of generally speaking, the more problems a regime faces, and that can be political opposition or in the case of Turkmenistan, economic challenges, things like that, I think their natural instinct is always to clamp down on the media. You know, even in Kyrgyzstan, which I think everyone would agree is probably the best of the five, you know, we've seen in the past where, and Johan had mentioned that, when all of a sudden the criticism or investigations start to pry into the affairs of top leadership or the leader himself, then all of a sudden, you know, even there, things change. And I mean, Kyrgyzstan has had its ups and downs for more than 20 years now, where all of a sudden an investigation into property that the president allegedly owns outside the country or something like that leads to the jailing of journalists. I remember when Kyrgyzstan was the first country to bar a journalist from practicing journalism because of a report that she wrote. So that's definitely one of the trigger mechanisms for repression of the media in Central Asia is something that the regime thinks that it has to handle the narrative of what's going on by itself, and it can't allow for any other interpretations of events in the country, which is why we have the Turkmenistan situation, for instance. As bad as it was, it's actually, and really you wouldn't have thought it could get worse. Yeah. But because of the problems it's having, food shortages, things like that, the government just really doubled down on trying to control any information about Turkmenistan, certainly inside the country, but also as much to the best of their ability about what gets outside the country.
Yeah. The same question, Gulnaz, I think we were talking about a little bit earlier about the killing of three RFRL journalists, among many other journalists in Afghanistan. Yes, it is a tough situation to work there. You never know where the threat is coming on you, from militants, from corrupt officials or warlords, whatever. Now you have a different set of challenges in Central Asia. So which one is more threatening? Which one is more dangerous for freedom of press?
Well, physical threats are obviously very serious in Afghanistan, but there are so many other threats that journalists in Central Asia face, and sometimes knowing your enemy is not easier, but in a way better, because it gives you an opportunity to prepare when you're able to identify certain warlords as your enemies and so on, like in Afghanistan. The problem in Central Asia is that a journalist very often doesn't know where the red line is. And every time they try to investigate a story, they don't know, whether they're going to be in trouble or not until they cross the red line. And once you cross the red line, you cannot uncross it. And of course, journalists throughout the region know the topics that are taboo for everyone, like don't touch on the president or his family members, or write about certain personalities in the government. But when there are many other topics and you want to investigate, you want to uncover, you want to report on them, and you don't know whether there are going to be repercussions for you and your media outlet or not, that is a very serious threat. And that's what we've seen in some countries like Uzbekistan, despite certain freedoms in the last couple of years, and also in Kazakhstan. Every time a journalist or a media outlet takes on a new topic or a project, they have to see it for themselves. And that precarious situation makes their life and work even more difficult.
Yeah, it has been challenging for RFRL's reporters also in Kazakhstan recently. So the region continues to drop in various rankings. So where things are really headed, and what does the latest ranking in RSF's Freedom Index tell us about the trajectory of the region? We will continue the Majlis podcast discussing this and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis. I'm joined by Yuhan Bir, Reporters Without Borders, Europe and Central Asia Director, Gulnaz Said, Europe and Central Asia Program Coordinator at the Committee to Protect Journalists, Farouk Yusufi, the Director of RFRL's Turkmenistan Unit, Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia Blog, Kishlak Owazi. I'm Mohamed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the state of press freedom in Central Asia. Welcome back, colleagues. So, Yuhan, let's discuss the findings a little bit of your report. There has been a quite change, as you are saying, in the region. As per your conclusion, Turkmenistan dropped to the very bottom of the list and Kyrgyzstan gained 15 points. Let's go beyond those numbers. Was there anything surprised you compared to the previous year when you were compiling the report?
Yeah, well, usually we keep noticing situation which sadly remains the same in Central Asia. And here this year, It has to be stressed that it's more volatile edition if you compare it with the previous ones. There is more movement than usually, and not all of them are wrong. I think of Uzbekistan gaining places, Kyrgyzstan also gaining places. So this gives us some kind of hope, at least, that everything is not only bleak in Central Asia. Well, different dynamics at stake, different processes, and of course political transitions impact this very heavily. We've seen that in Kyrgyzstan, a significant event was the latest presidential election. Before and after, this impacted the level of press freedom. Same when, following Karimov's death, President Mirziyoyev has started to open up the country. So let's see what the future will bring in Kazakhstan. Of course, for now, we can't say that we are noticing any change following Nazarbayev officially leaving his position, but still, of course, remaining quite in power. So these dynamics are very interesting to observe, and they are very diverse. But the trajectory of Tajikistan is very worrying. Tajikistan now borders the area in the index of the worst countries on Earth, the countries that are black on the press freedom map. Mm. And this, of course, has to do with so many independent media outlets being shut down in the past few years, dozens of journalists being forced into exile, and now internet censorship becoming commonplace in Central Asia. And the few remaining independent journalists are now called every morning, every day, by the security services, which basically tell us what to publish and what not to publish. So the fall of Tajikistan in the index is quite impressive, and it is something to discuss further.
Yeah, Bruce, Tajikistan is kind of interesting, right? You know, there are lots of things that are happening there. I mean, how much is this the ranking that it got in latest report of Reporters Without Borders relates to an overall situation there, overall trajectory of the country?
Well, I mean, this is part of a process that's been underway for several years now. You know, the cracking down on opposition parties, banning the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan, for instance. You know, I can remember that we did a show 3 or 4 years ago when we were talking to Tajik journalists, and we were talking about lawyers having problems defending their clients. And we raised the question of how long will it be until it's the journalists' turn. And even by that point, a lot of journalists from independent media outlets were fleeing the country and headed wherever they could go, some of them to Europe, some of them to other places. So, you know, the Tajik government is trying to remove any hint of opposition inside the country at all. And it's across a broad spectrum, everything they can possibly think of, from political opposition to media that is willing to point out some of the mistakes, which is ironic because just last November, December, Emomali Rahman was up in northern Tajikistan, and he called on journalists to stop writing such great things about Tajikistan because the outside world was getting the impression there were no problems in Tajikistan, and the media should point out problems, things that needed correcting inside Tajikistan. But we know, in fact, that's a joke. Yeah. If you wrote something bad about the Tajik government, they would shut you down. You would face charges. You could end up in prison very easily. So, you know, we know that there's a transition of power coming. They've done everything they can to try to make this as smooth as possible with no challenges from inside the country. And unfortunately, the independent media has been a victim of that process.
Yeah. You know, Farooq, coming back to Turkmenistan being at the bottom of the list at this stage, and you are being one of the only independent news organization in Turkmen language and having people on the ground working for you. So what keeps you awake at night?
I always worry about the colleagues who are there. I worry that...
What you are worried about?
Are they safe? The first thing in the morning I do is I write to every one of them through the messengers and say, hi, hello, how are you? Is everything okay? And then once I receive the response that everything is fine, nothing to be worried, then my day starts. Starts like that. But when it comes to Turkmenistan, you always think that things cannot get worse than they are, because I mean, you cannot imagine how they can get worse. But unfortunately, and interestingly, the authorities, the government of Berdimuhamedov is so creative. They always find ways to get worse. They always find ways to make not only press, but the people's lives more miserable. That's something that amazes me about Turkmenistan. But yes, for people in Turkmenistan, it has become very dangerous to practice your right to express your to freedom of speech. Yeah. And we had, in the past 6 months to 1 year, we had to move all of our journalists underground. They don't report with their own voices. They don't report with their own identity. We had to take this precaution in order to protect their well-being.
Everything
is underground.
Yeah, how far can you resist to this pressure? I mean, you're almost the only independent news organization, as I was saying, with presence on the ground. You are not accredited. Authorities wouldn't allow you to set up the bureau. And now Turkmenistan slipped to the worst possible position in terms of media freedom. And your colleagues are already under tremendous pressure, as you were saying. So how long and how far can you resist to this pressure?
Oh, we will do our work as long as we have dedicated people there, because those reporters who are there, they're very dedicated, and they want things to change for the country. And they do it sincerely when they send their reports. I mean, you know that this concerns them. For example, the people not getting paid on time, or people not being able to get like cash from ATMs, or people not being able to buy bread, people not being able to go as labor migrants outside the country, people not being able to go to study abroad. They sent reports about the most pressing issues for the country, and you see the sincerity there in their reporting.
Right. Gulnoza Farooq raised two very interesting points, and I would like to touch both of them one by one. Let's first deal with about how bad can this get. And Farooq was saying that every time when you think in Turkmenistan situation cannot get worse than this, but again, somehow it gets worse. So now Turkmenistan is worst of the worst. Things increasingly getting worse in Tajikistan with all the changes in media law. Kazakhstan is not in a bright spot. So how bad can this get?
Pretty bad, because the authorities are very skillful in inventing new ways of repressing independent voices, and also, interestingly enough, in using modern technologies in their repressive policies. For example, only yesterday I spoke to a journalist in Turkmenistan, and the journalist told me that they were under constant physical surveillance. But also we know that the Turkmen government has been using very advanced technology to surveil on its own citizens, and primarily on independent journalists and activists. And the worst part of this story is that it is developed countries that sell surveillance equipment to autocratic regimes without even thinking how that equipment can be used to suppress independent voices. And we know that it was some democratic countries that sold that kind of equipment to Turkmenistan and also to Azerbaijan and some other countries in our region. And when we advocate for greater press freedom in Central Asian countries, we not only try to work with the governments in those countries, but also with other governments who have business ties and political ties, diplomatic ties with the Central Asian governments, because we want to raise awareness about a serious threats to press freedom and human rights in general in those countries. And we want to make sure that whenever they reach business deals, including on sale of surveillance equipment to those regimes, they have to keep in mind that it is the journalists and activists in those countries who could be subject to surveillance at the end of the day. Yeah. And unfortunately, there are other countries like China who also produce very serious surveillance equipment. And they, because of their own repressive policies towards dissent, they don't care about human rights or press freedom when they reach business deals with Central Asian regimes. And there has been some progress in Europe. For example, the EU made a resolution last year to ban the trade of surveillance equipment to countries with autocratic regimes. But unfortunately, even within the European Union, there are countries who want to repeal that ban. So going back to your question, Mohammed, I would like to say that, you know, when you watch all those videos from Turkmenistan about president singing songs and rapping with his grandson, it all looks a bit cute and silly, and you just look at it and may not think how serious the situation is inside the country. And I think partly it is media's problem, that media outlets do not pay attention to more serious issues. Unfortunately, your organization does. And the Turkmen Service has been doing terrific work in uncovering very serious issues, some of which, like shortages throughout the country, including even cash shortages, have been mentioned. And I think behind that picture of a guy who likes to drive these really cool cars and rap with his grandson in foreign languages and whatnot, there is a very brutal dictator who has been suppressing voices of independent journalists for years.
Yeah, let's bring on Johan, you here. So Gulnaza is saying that things can even get worse further. So what can we really do about it? You know, it's helpful, reports like that you release. It's helpful in a way that it reminds us the type of challenges that we are facing in Central Asia. But it seems the trajectory tells us it's not proving as effective as we want to see it. Is there anything we can do more to change this trajectory?
Well, Gulnaza was very right mentioning the role of democracies here in experts of surveillance technologies to some of the worst countries on the planet, including Turkmenistan. And here, it's our role to lobby the governments and the European Union and other actors to ensure that the experts of surveillance technologies is controlled, is properly controlled, and that they are not sold to governments which will use them to track down critics. So this is one very interesting example which shows us that indeed the challenges are sometimes closer to us than we think. It's not about some very remote place. Some things can be done really at home. Well, some of these Central Asian countries, such as Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, are in talks with international financial institutions. And, for instance, we are advocating these financial institutions to ensure that some conditionality is also strictly put in place, including around press freedom issues. This is something, some other thing. Our Press Freedom Index serves to highlight the situation. And I think that when Turkmenistan drops so low in the index, I hope that it will give an impetus to a discussion about the situation in Turkmenistan, which unfortunately many people don't know about. So but we all need to lobby, and of course the challenges differ from one country to another. In Uzbekistan has opened up in recent years, and we see that there is no journalist in jail anymore, for instance, which was unthinkable just a couple of years ago. But now there is much progress to be done in terms of improving the legal framework, mostly enhancing media pluralism. But of course, it's hard to conceive media pluralism without free and fair elections, without political pluralism. So all these issues are intertwined. But in the case of Uzbekistan, legal reform is really a key issue, legal reform and the space for civil society to develop, for instance. While in Kyrgyzstan, the independence of the judiciary is a key issue, since we have noticed in the past few years that both positive and negative court decisions often bear political undertones. So increasing the independence of the judiciary will greatly help in the case of Kyrgyzstan, for instance.
Yeah. What I was saying is, Johan, earlier Farouk was kind of hinting into this aspect, like do Central Asian leaders, the authoritarian leaders, are coming up with creative ideas how to suppress the already very, very limited room for the press freedom. You know, they are coming up with new tools on how to silence journalists, and they are drawing new restrictive boundaries. But it looks like the ones who are responsible to challenge this, I mean, the NGOs community, maybe the democratic countries outside, is not up to the speed. Maybe I'm too self-critical here, but the reality is it is increasingly tough to be a journalist there. Is there any other tool left in our arsenal, in our toolbox, that can help the messengers there?
Sure. Well, we need to be really creative, and I fully share your view that the traditional tools that we used to rely on for lobbying and advocacy and trying to change things in these countries is, these traditional tools are less and less efficient, so we really need to be creative. I mentioned the advocacy towards international monetary institutions. This is one area I think that we really need to develop. Advocacy for the adoption of Magnitsky laws is another important tool, I think, that we need to develop. Maybe it won't have an impact on all these countries, but on some countries which rely on, whose leaders rely on international partners, it can really be helpful. And we've seen that in countries such as Azerbaijan, for instance, the simple threat of using Magnitsky kind laws have helped secure releases of journalists. So these are two examples of creative tools that we need to develop. On the technological front, we at RSF have tried to work on a technology which allows websites to be accessible in countries where they are blocked. So we have worked with Chinese partners on enhancing a technology which consists in placing mirror websites on the servers of giant international companies that are necessary for the business. And so far, it has proved effective to regain access to some censored websites in Uzbekistan, in Kazakhstan, in places like this, and including Turkmenistan. But of course here things are changing quickly, and authoritarian regimes know very well that this is taking place and that they are taking steps to challenge them. And we see that, for instance, even in Russia, the state is trying everything that it can to make sure that censorship cannot be circumvented. And this is, of course, something that also concerns Central Asia.
Okay. Let's bring Gulnaza also on this. Now that we have this report released by the RSF, perhaps CPG will come up with some similar reports in coming months or days. So what should be next until new reporting cycle comes? I mean, what is on your to-do list until new reporting cycle comes?
Let me just mention that every year we issue a report about journalists jailed worldwide. And the report is issued in December every year. And in 2018, Kyrgyzstan was the only country where a journalist was jailed in direct retaliation for his reporting. Azimjan Askarov, a journalist and human rights activist from southern Kyrgyzstan, has been in jail since 2010, and he's been jailed for life. And we have mentioned Kyrgyzstan as one of the most open countries in our discussion today, and that is true because journalists can practice their profession more freely in Kyrgyzstan than in other countries in Central Asia. However, let's not forget the fate of Azimjan Askarov, who is almost 70, and he's been jailed for life, and the Kyrgyz government, the previous president and the current president, has refused to release him despite the calls from organizations like CPJ and also the UN. Okay. And if Kyrgyzstan doesn't want to end up in our report of jailed journalists this year, it has to release Azimjan Askarov.
Yeah. You know, you have this report. You said it comes out in December every year. So following your report, what do you do as a follow-up until a next reporting cycle? I mean, is there anything on your to-do list to make this effective, to have some positive change on the ground?
Yeah, our report is something, or other reports, it's not the only report, and I'm sure it's the same for Johan. The report is a tool that helps our work and also allows other countries and organizations and governments to look at countries and the press freedom situation in those countries. But it doesn't mean that our work, our advocacy work, our support for press freedom in countries is necessarily, you know, comes necessarily after the report. It is something ongoing. We always work, and whenever there is a meeting, let's say, between government of Germany and the Kyrgyz government, then we try to make sure that the issue of jailed journalists or press freedom is raised during those meetings. And we all know that there are political realities, realpolitik, there are certain national interests that sometimes trump human rights issues, including press freedom, but we try to make sure that in any negotiations with the governments of the Central Asian countries, other governments, be it the US, be it the EU institutions or international financial institutions or Western governments, they raise the issue of press freedom with Kyrgyzstan. And as Johan said, press freedom and human rights in general should be a condition for other countries to continue deals, political, business, and other deals with the governments in Central Asia. And the Global Magnitsky Act is one of those mechanisms. We also work with the EU institutions. We have a representative in Brussels who is a medium between us, based here in New York in the headquarters, and also the EU institutions. And as I said, we try to find pressure points and opportunities to put pressure on those governments through democratic governments, because dealing directly with the regimes like the Turkmen regime is very, very difficult.
Okay, you know, we also need to end the discussion, but let's end this with the journalist's point of view. I mean, what do you think might be helpful to create a condition on the ground in Central Asia that where you can do what you're supposed to do as a independent journalist? Maybe, Bruce?
There's a lot that needs to be done, certainly. Yeah. As a first step, it would be nice if when high-ranking Western officials went to these countries that they would say and tell the government of where they are, the Uzbek government, Kazakh, whatever, that they want. They know they're going to be filmed. They know that they're going to use this to show that, you know, their country is known in the West and all kinds of stuff. But there has to be a part that they insist is included where they raise human rights or media freedoms or something in. And it has to be broadcast by local media. It can only be 10 seconds or 15 seconds, but they have to show, say, I'll make a state visit. I'm the leader of this country, but you have to show video of me asking you about what you're doing to respect human rights and show your answer. And like I said, it can be a very brief segment of a news broadcast or a very small part of a print media article, but they should insist that that's included just to, one, for their own credibility, but to also show the people of the country they're visiting that this is a serious issue for Western governments, and it's something we're going to raise every time we're out here.
Yeah, you know, I remember in my old days in the Turkmen service, in Farouk's position, once Kofi Annan was there, they showed the interview with Kofi Annan, but the translation was absolutely nothing to do with what he was saying. So, Farouk, you kind of created this conversation about the creativity, so that the way the authorities are coming up with new ideas on how to suppress the reporters, independent media there. So, in terms of the challenging that narrative, what's that has not been tried yet? I mean, what could be more helpful for you guys to do your job the way you want to do it?
Oh, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, I would have like a very big wish list for Turkmenistan, but I can say what we can do. Like, I can give you one example.
What I said, like with the NGOs who are working to create a condition for independent journalism to be functional,
yeah,
in Central Asia, or
yeah,
the Western governments.
I think NGOs are doing everything possible in their ability.
Mm-hmm. What about the Western governments here?
Sorry?
What about the democratic governments outside the region?
I mean, many things depend on the not only Western governments, any government who Turkmenistan is interested to do business with. Like, whenever a European country leaders or officials visit, or vice versa, the Turkmen officials visit to Europe or to United States, I think the press freedom and human rights should be on the top of the agenda, not in the bottom, which usually is the case. And the way that the Turkmen government, Turkmen regime, is let know that unless the things change, we cannot do business with you. Because these businesses of these countries, they also are harmed by the situation that exists in Turkmenistan now, because we see a lot of Western businesses now trying to sue the Turkmen government because Turkmen government took over their business or embezzled their money. So unless human rights situation and especially freedom of press situation does not change in Turkmenistan, the foreign investors cannot should not hope for getting some benefit from doing business in that country.
Yeah, you know, in my own engagement here with the officials, I keep telling them that if we are able to improve the situation of press freedom in the region, it's going to have a chain effect to improve many other things by itself. So thank you very much, Farouk Yusufi, the director of RFRL's Turkmenistan unit. Also, big thanks to Johan Beer, the Reporters Without Borders European Central Asia director, Gulnaz Said, European Central Asia program coordinator at the Committee to Protect Journalists, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, Blok, Ishlok, Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.